shoulder then, I'm younger than that now.
Welcome to what we like to think of as one of the most unusual and inspiring programs that you've ever heard. One that shines a light on people that are living lives of purpose, passion, and adventure, and dares to suggest that you can do it too. It's called Growing Bolder. I'm Mark Middleton, along with Bill Schaefer, asking that you give us just a few minutes to see for yourself as we bring in world-renowned experts, best-selling authors, and people that are living extraordinary lives.
And Mark, on today's program, a cultural anthropologist with how to add more creativity to just about everything we do. And then why one of today's best-known comedians traded in life as a medical doctor for a career in showbiz. We'll also talk with a Nobel Prize winner about her incredible discoveries about aging, and we'll meet a former pro wrestler who was Johnny B. Bad in the ring, but a true hero outside of it. But first, meet a singer whose life took him from the projects of New York City to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Amazing people, amazing stories. It's time for Growing Bolder.
If we could start anew, I wouldn't hesitate. I'd gladly take you back and tempt the hand of fate. Tears on my pillow, pain in my heart caused by you.
Oh man, that is one of the greatest sounds in the history of rock and roll, taking you all the way back to 1958. You know, that was the very first million-selling hit for the Imperials. I'm Bill Schaefer with Mark Middleton here on Growing Bolder. And you know, Mark, what made that band work, what made their sound so distinctive, is that unmistakable voice of Little Anthony. And what an amazing career and life Little Anthony would go on to have from there.
Yeah, you know, they broke so many of the greatest songs ever. Going Out of My Head, ooh, Hurt So Bad, Shimmy Shimmy Coco Pop. So the big question is, how did this little kid raised in the projects in Brooklyn make it all the way to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? And how did he face so many enormous challenges in his life to end up not just surviving, but actually thriving in the aftermath? Well, the good news is he's written a book that explains it all. In fact, the only way to top the book would be to hear it straight from the man himself. So that's what we're proud to do today. Say hello to Little Anthony Gordine. Hey, Anthony, how are you?
Hey, how you doing? How are you guys doing?
We're doing fabulous. So tell us where you are today and what's going on in the Little Anthony world.
I'm in beautiful downtown Newark, New Jersey, if you'll believe that. It's beautiful. Gosh. So this is sort of our home base, my home base, because we're touring with the Spinners. So it's all around the tri-state area. So we decided to make this our home base because it's closer to the airport when it's time for us to go home.
Isn't that awesome? What a great show that would be. The Spinners, Games People Play, and Little Anthony and the Imperials. Man, that's got to be a tough ticket. The very first point I want to make with you today is probably the most important. It's that not only were you probably the greatest R&B singer of all time, but even now at the age, in your mid-70s, are you 76? Is that right?
Yeah, I'm 76, yeah. When I recorded that song, I just did the numbers in my head, and I don't think about it much, but, you know, Tears in My Pillow was like almost like 59 years ago.
It's incredible, not just what you did then, Anthony, but the fact that you can still do it now. I've heard you, and you still sound amazing. Give us a little taste. Sing just a couple lines.
Oh, no.
Come on.
I'm up out the bed. I'm a rock.
Tears on my pillow. See, they're going to think I'm you.
Yeah, right. It's too early for me, buddy. I'm a saloon singer.
So how do you do it? How do you still have the magic that a lot of other singers don't?
Well, it's the grace of God. I tell people all the time, and whether they believe it or not, it really doesn't matter to me. I believe it, and I understand it. It's His voice. It's a gift. It's not natural. It's supernatural. Because I even amaze myself sometimes when I go into a song and hit it at the exact key that it was when I was 17 years old. That sometimes I say to myself, oh, no, that can't be. I've talked to a lot of artists about that. The late Jimmy Scott was similar to me, and it's much till he died. And then you have Tony Bennett, I spoke to. And they all seem to say the same thing. And Mel Torme was that way. And their voices just stayed solid. And it just cannot be any other reason.
So Anthony, take us back 60 years ago to when you were 17 years old, before it all broke for you, a kid running the streets of Brooklyn, New York. You know, kids today, you know, they're sitting around trying to make their rap records and everything else in their living room with the technology. You didn't have any of that back then. How did you know that you were going to do what you did, and how did you get started?
I didn't know. I was a kid. You know, in those days, the thing that turned kids on, urban kids or in the city, was singing groups. That, it really began as far back as the Ink Spots, and then went on to become the Ravens, and then Sunnytale and the Orioles, and then the Flamingos, and on and on and on. And that was what the kids in those days loved to hear. It's similar to what the kids do today in urban areas, which is rap. So that's the big deal now. But then it's all about the street corner harmony, street corner singers, you know. And it was it actually opened up what we call rock and roll. I like to tell people that the rhythm and blues is the mother of rock and roll, and it kind of evolved that way and to what we know today as rock and roll. And really, from a standpoint of pure rock and roll, there is no more rock and roll. You know, there are so many different styles, and you know, garage bands, grunge bands, this band, that band, hard metal, heavy metal, soft metal, you know, on and on and on. It really isn't that. They just keep that name as an identifiable way of trying to understand what's going on.
And I think that's why your music is so timeless, because it's organic, it's human, it's the essence of who we are.
Well, you know, it's the funniest thing. When I came up, my dad was a jazz musician. He played a few of the big bands, very popular bands in those days. And I was listening to bebop, and I was listening to Illinois Jacket and Ella Fitzgerald, and I was influenced by them. Like I said, it's an amazing thing how things progress. If you would have told me then I was going to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, there was no Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, so I couldn't even describe it then. But the fact that we ended up there was really testimony to the great writers and producers that were in our lives, like Teddy Randazzo, Bobby Weinstein, Bobby Hart, and then the great Don Costa. You know, it's just an amazing thing. Richard Barrett, George Goldner, and all these people were a part of that journey. And the transition of that journey. I can't speak for everybody that came out of that era, because a lot of those actors somehow still think they're in the 50s, you know, and they don't really see the bigger picture and look for growth, because it's something humans have to do, especially creative people, and so they kind of get stuck. But in our case, it just seemed to move us that way. It's like we went from what we call in those days bubblegum singers, you know, Tears in My Pillow, or doing a novelty tune like Shimmy Shimmy Coco Bop, which I don't understand to this day, but it was a hit. And then moving on, and then all of a sudden, meeting Teddy Randazzo, and he introduced us to Don Costa, and they totally turned the music around with us. It went from this kid sound to a very sophisticated pop sound. R&B, I mean, literally, which influenced a lot of the Philly sound, Gabriel and Huff, Tommy Bell. We were part of that. And I tell you something else that amazes me. we were the only act, whether you're a solo act or a singing group or any kind of singers, other than Sinatra, that had hits in four different decades.
Amazing. And folks, if you think we're talking to a rock and roll historian, you're right, we are. But more than that, this is Anthony Gordine, who you certainly remember from Little Anthony and the Imperials, now in his mid-70s and still getting it done. And Anthony, your last point is a great one. Four different decades. You guys were really one of the original crossover acts everybody loves. I can still, you know, hear Hurt So Bad in my head. Mm-hmm. You not only cross over for different music genres, but different age groups. Who come see you now? Who likes you guys?
Well, we have all kind of great. It's amazing. I mean, the other day we did a thing in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and they had a meet and greet. And there were from every age, from women 24 years old to grandmothers at 74 years old. And that's what comes out. And then they bring their kids And in some cases, their kids dig that kind of sound. So they keep following it. And that's the reason why. And we kind of grew with everybody. We grew together in that area. And so when we would perform, we developed a situation where we were entirely different from our peers that came out of the late 50s, 60s, early 60s. And we developed an entertainment style. We developed different sounds. We influenced a lot of people, not knowingly, and our performance. We actually went from being recording stars to performing stars.
Wow. And, you know, folks can hear the energy in your voice in the mid-70s. You love this. And, you know, that's what's so cool about your book, too, because you're such an interesting person. Because when you talk about your experience, it's not like, well, I did this and I did that. It's about the amazing people you met, the lessons you learned, and the wisdom that you gained. You had ups and downs. Can you leave us, Anthony, with what is it that you've learned about life that we all can grab onto and maybe would help the rest of us through, too?
One of the things that I'll say, and I say with no problem at all, there is a God. That's your decision to decide or not to decide. But as far as I'm concerned, that was the driving force that kept me alive when I should have been dead 100 times over. It is the very thing that moved me to the point where I am today. There's a destiny. I'm not just floundering through life. There's a plan. I see it. Now I see these things happen. I'm going, what? You know, once you begin to understand that, and then you receive that, and you understand the glory goes to the Father God, because he's the creator. He knows each one of us. He knows every hair in your head. He knows where you're going to go. In fact, he knew who you were before you was even born. That's what the Bible tells us. And once you understand that, man, it makes life so interesting. You know, my younger part of my life was really a mess. In some instances, it was fun as a kid coming up with my aunts and my mother and these beautiful women, my Aunt Sarah, Aunt Bessie, Aunt Shorty, and all of this kind of thing. From Sam Cooke, knowing him as a young man back in Harlem when he came up to sing with the Soul Stirrers, and on and on and on. Then I leaped to another chapter in my life that was a disaster. You know, rock and roll, drugs, and something else. I don't know. But anyway, I went through that cycle, and I was saved. I literally did not go. A lot of my peers are not even here anymore, gentlemen. They're gone. For one reason or another, or the drugs, or a lot of alcohol, whatever it is, took their lives. Their lifestyle destroyed them.
And here is little Anthony Gordine with the passion and the excitement and the excitement for life. Folks, if you're looking for a firsthand account of musical history and a lesson in humanity from one of the most interesting and insightful talents of our time, check out the book Little Anthony, My Journey, My Destiny. What a great visit with a great man. Up next, who knew Johnny B. Badd could turn out oh so good? A story of reinvention and redemption guaranteed to touch your heart. This is Growing Bolder.
If we could start anew, I wouldn't hesitate.
Stay connected to Growing Bolder for daily doses of hope, inspiration, and possibility. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for our latest stories and motivational pictures.
I'm Mark Middleton with Bill Schaefer here on Growing Bolder with another truly amazing story. one that every single one of us can relate to. You know, anyone that's ever lost a parent without getting the chance to truly say goodbye will completely understand what we're talking about. And did you ever just want to quit your job but have no idea what you'll do? Well, these are some of the things that Mark Miro was going through.
Yeah, his life was like one of extremes. He was a pro wrestler. Well, not just a pro wrestler. He was a world champion, a big-time celebrity living a big-time life. But the career ended. He had no idea what to do next. So he looked back to where it all began to figure out who he was and who he wanted to be.
Like any other kid who grew up in poverty, Mark Miro dreamed of finding a way out.
I remember getting out of my bed and going over that little broken down desk in that little book and writing, I want to get my mom a house. I want to be rich. I want to be famous. I want to be somebody.
He became somebody in professional wrestling. The kid who grew up with nothing fought his way up to everything. He hung with presidents, got to meet living legends, partied with rock stars, and posed with superstars. Heck, he'd even become a superstar himself as Johnny B. Bad, action figure and all.
Johnny B. Bad was such a fun character because it was so opposite of who I am. You know, I'm so outrageous, it's contagious. I don't sit down, I get down. So it was this real fun, crazy character, you know. But when you strip all that away and take off all the wrestling outfits and all the glamour and you just go, hey, this is who I really am. I'm a drug addict. I've lived a bad life. I've done some stupid things. I lost the most important people in my life without ever being there for them. And this is who I am. I made some really bad mistakes.
When his wrestling career ended, Miro felt lost. The man who once filled arenas mostly sat home alone, empty, lonely, searching for a purpose. Maybe, he thought, he could speak at schools, help kids avoid some of his mistakes. So he set up a few presentations, and nobody cared.
I try to use statistics and tell kids don't do this or don't, and people just sitting on their hands going, when's this guy going to finish, you know?
He was a flop. As a last resort, he threw out the statistics and began to speak from the heart, to tell deeply personal stories. He started to make a connection. His longtime friend from wrestling, Diamond Dallas Page, noticed. He sent a video crew to one of Mark's presentations and posted this clip online of one of Miro's most powerful moments, remembering his mother's funeral.
Mom, please wake up. Please get up. And then I finally got the nerve to walk up to her. And as I got closer, I could see my mom for the first time. I mean, she was so beautiful. She was dressed in white. I mean, she looked like an angel. And I just stood over and I said, Mom, you are my hero. Everything I am, everything I hope to be was because of you. You loved me so much. You gave me a life. You're the only one that ever believed in me. How did I repay her? By getting drunk? By getting high? By getting stupid? By hanging out with losers? For what? All she ever wanted to do was talk to me. I wish I could talk to you now, Mom. I wish you could see what I'm doing. Why couldn't I have been a better son? We are defined by our choices. But if you surround yourself with people involved in drugs and alcohol and pills, it's a dead end. I'm not here to preach to you. I'm here to tell you I lived that life. It leads to broken hearts, broken relationships, broken dreams, and death. For what? To get high? If you have a mother or a father, when you go home, tell them how much you love them. See, my whole life was about being rich and famous. I had to be a millionaire. I had to win the race. I had to win the race at the expense of my marriage, my family, my friends. For what? To be all alone in the world? I learned what is truly important, and that is how precious this gift of life is.
What happened next took him completely by surprise. The video went viral, had millions of views. Speaking requests came flooding in from all over the country, along with notes from students thanking him for changing and sometimes saving their lives.
You gotta believe. Say, I believe.
I believe.
I believe.
I believe.
In his mid-50s, Mark Miro had found his purpose and a whole new way of looking at life.
Bill, when you think about as adults, we become very complacent in our life. One day becomes the next, and we say things like this, I always wished I would have done that, or those were the days. No, these are the days. These are the days that we could accomplish anything we set our mind to, learn from past mistakes, grow, go after those dreams and goals that lie dormant inside. Maybe someone's wanting to write a book. Maybe they want to open a business. Maybe they want to rekindle a relationship with a family member they haven't talked to in a while. Now is the time. Today is the day. Go after dreams and goals.
Mark Miro's goal was to be champion. He achieved it in the ring, but now he's a champion on a whole new level. Only this time, it means everything.
See, it's not what's in your pocket that matters. It's what's in your heart that truly matters. Love. Love is just a word. Until somebody comes along and gives it meaning. You. You're the meaning.
Mark Miro is one of the most powerful speakers with one of the most important messages you'll ever hear. He speaks mostly to kids, but everything he says applies to nearly every age, especially if you're over 50.
Yeah, and like he says, it all comes down to choices, deciding how we're going to live and who we want to be. Mark Miro found his purpose, and he's making a difference in countless lives, helping others find theirs. That's a true champion.
Coming up on Growing Bolder, a Nobel Prize winner's fascinating discovery about aging.
Growing Bolder and Humana are celebrating the opportunity of aging and smashing stereotypes with the new 65 Plus. We're sharing examples of people 65 and older who are pursuing their passions and leading happy, healthy, and active lives. You can inspire others by sharing your own photos and stories. Find more information at growingbolder.com/new65plus.
We have had a lot of very accomplished, very influential guests on this program, as you know, but I believe this is going to be a first, a Nobel Prize winner who has also been honored with nearly every other major award available in the field of science.
Yeah, really exciting. She won the Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine in 2009 for discovering the molecular nature of telomeres. Those are the ends of chromosomes that preserve genetic information, and for co-discovering the enzyme that maintains those telomere ends, a discovery that has already had tremendous implications for cancer and aging research.
And now, folks, she's written a book about it that explains how to slow the way we age at a fundamental level. It's being called revolutionary, transformational, and most are saying it's one of the most exciting health books in the last decade.
She has been named one of Time Magazine's 100 most influential people. She's president of the Salk Institute and past president of the American Association for Cancer Research. Welcome to the program, the author of The Telomere Effect, Dr. Elizabeth Blackburn. Good morning, doctor. How are you?
Good morning.
Well, thank you.
Very well, thank you.
Thank you so much. And let's start with telomeres. In lay terms, if you will, what are they and what is their connection to the length and the quality of our life?
Well, as you rightly said, they are the protective tips at the ends of chromosomes, and a useful way of thinking about them is to imagine a shoelace and think of the little protective tips that you have at the ends of your shoelaces, and if you don't have those, the shoelace end frays away. Well, we can think of our genetic material, our DNA in chromosomes, as being like those shoelaces, and so all throughout our body we have, you know, innumerable little shoelaces which carry our genetic material, and these are the chromosomes. And the telomeres are these protective tips, and over the human lifespans of, you know, many decades, they have a tendency to wear down. They don't get replenished fully, and the rate of that wearing down affects how the cells can work, because cells are very sensitive to having telomeres that have worn down too much and no longer protect the genetic material. And when that happens, they can't replenish tissues. And that, in turn, from a lot of research in the last few decades, is giving a risk factor for some of the major diseases of aging, the things that really stop us being in a health span, and we can think of us as going into what you described as morbidity toward the ends of our lives. So maintaining telomeres turns out to be one of the ways of, you know, pushing your health span out longer because of being able to hold out for longer in terms of all sorts of organs throughout the body and prevent them from going into the state of not being able to replenish properly, prevents them from going into more inflammatory states that in turn lead to these major diseases of aging and mortality.
And you have discovered an enzyme, a very special enzyme called telomerase. Is that how you pronounce that?
Right, yeah. And that enzyme, we discovered it because the ends naturally do wear down. There was obviously an issue of, well, they can't wear down forever, otherwise, you know, we wouldn't be here on the planet. And so in very basic science research a few decades ago, I and my colleague Carol Greider, and spurred by work that we did with Jack Szostak, with whom those two I shared the Nobel Prize. And so what we found was a completely new kind of enzyme that could build back the ends. And then the question was, how does that work in humans? And the answer is, in humans, that while we do have telomerase in certain cell types, it's under a lot of very delicate checks and balances in humans. And there seems like there's not quite enough to get us through life. And so natural ways of spurring it to be a little more active are things like, you know, physiological changes that you get with exercise and good diet and sleep patterns and even, you know, good thought patterns, because stress makes a big difference physiologically. But it's also clear that cancer, is also spurred by, some cancers is spurred by too much telomerase. And so we live in a bit of a delicate way of our control of telomerase. So we've decided that the physiological things that increase telomere maintenance, partly through telomerase, are the best way to go. We wrote this book to put all this useful information about the safe and useful things you can do that help preserve telomeres, because that in turn helps preserve the health span.
Folks, we're talking with Dr. Elizabeth Blackburn, a Nobel Prize winner for her work with telomeres. Just fascinating, one of the most exciting and fascinating parts of science today. And the good news is that you've discovered, Doctor, as you say, that we can, by how we live, by lifestyle choices, by lifestyle modification, delay and in some cases prevent the shortening of these telomeres, which determine how long we live. What is the prescription for a healthy longevity now, Doc? What do you mention in the books are some of the things that we could do?
Well, luckily, a combination of things all add up. But if I had to summarize it really briefly, I'd say that, just moving, getting some exercise, not huge amounts even, that quantifiably has effects on telomeres, and particularly coping with the stresses and strains that, you know, always happen in life. But finding ways to cope with it is very important, because that is having severe reactions to chronic psychological stressful situations has physiological effects, and one of them is that it really quantifiably damps down, you know, and impairs telomere maintenance. And so realizing that there are ways to try and cope with it, which include building a little bit of exercise into one's day, is very helpful. But the prescription was not to run a marathon every week, and the prescription was not to, you know, go on some severe diet or something like that. It was just, look, make consistent long-term changes, because all these effects play out in the long term. So there won't be an instant result, although, of course, you always feel good after exercise. Actually, one's mood improves. It's been shown in studies for, like, up to 3 hours after exercise. So the telomere studies indicate, though, that you don't need huge amounts to have beneficial effects on telomere maintenance. For example, people under severe chronic stress, it turns out that by itself is enough to impact on telomere maintenance over the long run, over periods of years. But when people habitually do like 10 to 15 minutes of even just, you know, moderate but, you know, work up a bit of sweat exercise per day, you can fit it in a short lunch hour, you know, quick walk or run up the stairs or something. That kind of thing really in the long term buffers the effects of stress on the telomeres. And so, you know, it's a very useful thing to know. Because when one's stressed, you know, sometimes the last thing you think of is I need to get moving, but actually it turns out to be particularly beneficial for telomere maintenance. So it's a useful guideline. The studies in humans are very extensive, very large numbers in various kinds, and you can use the measure of telomeres in population cohort studies. Statistically, it's a good guideline.
In the book, you do even create a list of foods associated with shorter telomeres and foods associated with longer ones. So what should we avoid and what should we eat more of?
Well, things that we already know for a good reason, and this adds another one. So refined sugars, and particularly sugar sodas, which are, you know, sort of like taking in liquid sugar, those really were associated in a very large study with shortened telomeres. And that theme of refined sugars has certainly come up very much in the consideration of the incipient diabetes and actual diabetes epidemics going on right now. So that's one of the things that quantifiably does short telomeres, is sort of shortened telomeres, is dose, you know, having high doses, if you will, of refined sugars. And another interesting thing that came out in the WHO recommendations about a year ago, was that red processed meats, high consumption of them associated with risks for cancers. And again, that's one of the things that comes out in the studies of telomere maintenance. But usually what is consistent in studies around the world with telomere maintenance and looking at diet habits is that people who have the kind of thing called a Mediterranean diet, essentially plenty of fruits and vegetables and, you know, whole foods, grains, nuts, not too much refined flour, all of those kinds of things help. Omega-3 fatty acids, which have, you know, a very good history in considerations of heart health, that also emerges as something that's quite a good predictor of the higher levels you have, the less your telomere wearing down happens. So there's useful guidelines, but, you know, it's pretty clear that people who are intensively trying to diet and get very preoccupied about their food, in telomere-related studies in people, they actually had shorter telomeres because they're probably, you know, really, really not doing themselves much good. And so we're really just saying, do sensible things, eat, you know, lots of delicious kinds of foods, and keep an eye on not pushing the balance too far in favor of things like refined sugars and red processed meats. But we don't, you know, have prescriptions or any kind of, you know, don't do this. It's just keep an eye on what you're eating and in the long term make those kinds of smaller changes that, you know, push the balance in the healthy direction.
Boy, and we want to thank you for the inspiration that you've given us, the knowledge that you're giving us, and all the things that we can learn from you. You know, we've all known that lifestyle choices can help us live longer, more importantly, live better as we age. And now, thanks to Dr. Elizabeth Blackburn and the people that she works with, we know why it's all about the telomeres. If you want to live longer and live better, pick up the book that the entire science community is talking about, The Telomere Effect. Coming up, why he gave up life as a doctor for a career as a comedian. This is Growing Bolder.
We've got news. Watch.growingbolder.com, the world's first streaming site for active adults, is now live. Growing Bolder TV shows, national specials, documentaries, and inspiring videos on ordinary people living extraordinary lives 24/7 on demand for free. Watch.growingbolder.com is now live.
I'm Bill Schaefer with Mark Middleton, and this is Growing Bolder Life. all of our lives are filled with opportunity, and we can either let it just go by or grab it and see where it takes us. It may not always lead to where we thought, but the ride's almost always an adventure. Our next guest has been on one of the most unusual and unexpected adventures anyone could imagine.
Yeah, this is the guy who always wanted to be a comedian, but he focused on his studies and it certainly paid off for him. He graduated from high school at just 16. He headed off to medical school and became a doctor. But like Bill said a moment ago, what he really wanted to do is become a comedian. So after a couple of years, he decided to just go for it. How did he do? Well, he's a regular on the TV series Community, and in the movies, he's had an unforgettable role in all three of the Hangover films. He's also the star of his own sitcom on ABC, Dr. Ken. Let's say hello to Ken Jeong. Hey, Ken, how are you?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Man, what a ride it has been for you. And talk about art imitating life. The Dr. Ken Show is funny and more than just a little bit like your life, even to the point where your character goes to an open mic night and gets a part in a show. How similar is the series to what your life might have been like if you had actually stayed in medicine?
Wow, that's the best question I've been asked all day, because I do feel like this show represents exactly what you said. I mean, I think that if there was an alternative timeline where The Hangover never happened, or Knocked Up, the first movie I was in, never happened, this would be maybe the direction of where my life would go. And that's the way, as one of the writers of the show, that's kind of how I direct the creative kind of a flow of the show. So, you know, I'm always thinking like that. So I think my character is a bit different from me. I think in real life, my character's in real life, I am more sensitive, a little bit more self-aware. I think that's where kind of the fiction is, where I think I'm a little bit more of a doofus, my character on the show than how I am in real life. But I'm probably more entertaining as in my character than me in real life.
And you know, Ken, when we read your intro like that, you know, one thing leads into another, and it all sounds neat and clean. But stuff like this never ever happens. I mean, what a rare opportunity you've had. You've got to create a sitcom to steer the writing. What are some of the messages that you hope to get across inside the laughter with this opportunity?
Well, thank you for asking that, because this season, this has been a different season creatively than last year. Last year was really about, so grateful to get the show on the air, just want to make it as entertaining as possible. This year, you know, I was all about making it deeper and making the stories more grounded medically, just making it about something. And to me, this is really about a guy who really cares about his patients, is a good doctor, and loves his family. And so I co-wrote an episode a couple of weeks ago that was dealing with breast cancer, and how my real life wife is a breast cancer survivor, 8 years cancer free. And we had I wrote an episode where my TV wife finds a breast lump, and kind of like the angst of waiting, you know, for a day or two to get the results. And so that's what the episode was about. But we were also very cautious about not to make it preachy, not to make it too saccharine. So we the best way to deal with it, because it is a comedy, is to really fill in as many appropriate jokes, appropriate edgy jokes as much as possible. So there's a lot of edgy humor to be had in a dark situation in real life, you know. So, and kind of the jokes that me and my wife said in real life are kind of the jokes that we used on the show, yeah.
Folks, we're talking to Ken Jeong, who is an actor, a producer, and he doesn't just play a doctor on TV. He is actually a doctor. And Ken, obviously, the name of our show is Growing Bolder. Of the many things we like about your story, perhaps the thing we like the most is the risk that you have taken to get where you are today. You know, it's easy when you've got nothing to lose to take a chance, but to walk away from a medical career, to take a chance at creating a career like you have, you know, takes some major cojones, if you will. How hard was it for you to make that transition, and what can we learn from what you've accomplished?
Well, it was extremely tough. I mean, because I had no idea what, I had no idea if I could be able to have a career, because I was very scared, and for good reason. I mean, I'm leaving a stable job where you're getting paid six figures a year for the rest of your life. I was a partner in my practice. So it was really like something that I had the amazing support from my parents and my wife and my family, and they at times believed in me more than I believed in myself. So it was a combination of a lot of things. And I think timing is everything. I think I was just blessed with the right time to leave. You know, I think I was ready to leave and pursue this at that time. So I think that had a lot to do with it. So I've just been very, very blessed and very passionate about what I do. So I think it's timing and passion probably the take-home point for this.
And kind of interesting too, Ken, that you've really approached this almost like you're not really a Hollywood insider because you didn't grow up in showbiz, and then as a minority, kind of an outsider because you really weren't part of the mainstream, yet you've overcome all of this stuff just by pushing forward. What wisdom, what can we learn from your story and where you've gotten so far?
I normally don't really say this in interviews, but I guess that it's just an inherent belief in what you do, you know? Like, I believe in what I do, you know? And also, I believe I can also make mistakes and make adjustments from those mistakes, if that makes sense, you know? My head writer on the show, he always says, like, when you're making decisions in television and in the creative arts, you're 50% right, 50% wrong. But that's okay. That's still batting 500. So don't be afraid to fail. Don't be afraid to succeed.
Our thanks to the talented, creative, and fearless Dr. Comedian Ken Jeong. Up next, how all of us can add a little creativity to nearly everything we do. This is Growing Bolder. Sign up for the Growing Bolder Insider newsletter, delivered to your inbox every week. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingbolder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Bolder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingbolder.com/podcasts.
This is Growing Bolder. I'm Mark Middleton. That guy over there is Bill Schaefer. And of all the traits that people possess, which would you think has the most important role in terms of development of mankind? Intelligence, compassion? Well, we are about to meet a man who believes he has the answer, something that truly sets humans apart from all the rest.
Yeah, and before we tell you what it is, this guy is a pretty fascinating human himself. The chair of anthropology at Notre Dame. He's also a National Geographic explorer, and he's the author of some fascinating books like Race, Monogamy, and Other Lies They Told You, and his newest, The Creative Spark. Let's say hi to Augustine Fuentes. Hey, Augustine, how are you?
I am well. Thanks for having me on the show.
Interesting that you believe the trait that makes humans stand out from all other species is creativity.
Yeah, and it's in fact, it was forced on me, not by a belief, but by the last 28 years of doing research on human behavior, primate behavior, animal behavior, human evolution, human biology. After just accumulating evidence, it was became very, very clear that the traditional explanations for who and what and why we are fall short. The data argue very strongly. We're not the nicest species, we're not the nastiest species, but we are the most creative.
Which I think begs the question, how do you define creativity? Because I've seen the work of some insects out there that seems pretty darn creative.
Oh, absolutely. There are so many organisms on the planet that do incredible things. Birds, insects, other mammals. Absolutely, without a doubt. What I'm talking about is this ability to interconnect ideas, experiences, and imagination. That is, human creativity is the ability to move back and forth between the realms of what is and what could be, to confront a problem, to imagine a solution that is not evident from the materials at hand, and to translate that solution into material resounding reality. And usually to do it collaboratively. So other organisms do amazing stuff, but humans are particularly adept and particularly important at reshaping the world around them as they reshape themselves.
You've got a ton of passion. This is going to be a more exciting segment than we even had hoped for. So you talked about, you just mentioned something, you get a kick out of this. You just mentioned something really interesting. It's the word collaboration. The ability to work together, you know, is another big part of what has made humans humans. But as Mark said, I mean, there are insects that do that, too.
Exactly. But an insect, and they do it incredibly well. Let's take an ant colony, right? So every single ant in that colony is related to one another, almost a clone, actually as a half sibling to each other. And they communicate because they all have pretty much the same DNA and the same sort of chemical signals. An ant can't stop in the middle of sort of rolling to make their ant mound and say to themselves, I'm not sure if I should be doing this. I think I might be rather doing something else. The strange thing about humans is that every single one of us self-reflects and is aware of their own individuality and their own creativity and their own options, and yet we still are able to collaborate in an unbelievably complex ways. And so it's not that other organisms don't get together to collaborate. It's that the humans, with all of their complexity, all of this cognition, and all of this baggage that we each carry, are able to do it. A good example is when we sit down to a Thanksgiving dinner. You could bring 50 people who didn't even know each other together, have them sit down with a giant table covered with incredible food, and they could, in most cases, get along okay. They might disagree or you know, some half of them will go want to watch the game. But they'll figure it out. There's not another species on the planet that you could do that with.
Man, don't you think, Bill, that getting into this guy's class at Notre Dame is nearly impossible?
He's the Deepak Chopra of anthropology.
We're talking to Agustin Fuentes, who is an anthropologist of all things at Notre Dame, who's written a fascinating new book called The Creative Spark. So he's coming at this from an entirely different direction. You've worked with all sorts of animals. You've studied their behavior. Why is it of all the animals, the one that we seem to have the closest relationships with are dogs?
Well, it is absolutely amazing that of all the relationships we have with animals, and there are a lot of them, the bond between humans and dogs is the strongest. It's probably because they are the first species that we entered this relationship we call domestication with. 20 to 30,000 years ago, sort of wolves and humans started working it out together, and today we have, you know, we're hanging out with our schnoodles and whatever other breeds we've made. It's an incredible relationship because across the planet, in most but not all societies, humans and our canine companions share space, emotional attachments. We even have the ability to affect each other's hormones. When you stare at a dog in the face, if it's your dog or a dog that you're working with, it actually changes your body and their bodies change too. It's just an incredible relationship. I'm pretty convinced that if an anthropologist came down from Mars and looked at all the animals on the planet, she would think that the human-dog relationship is probably one of the most important and interesting things to study.
You know, something else we would really wanted to talk about, especially on this program, is what happens as we age, how we treat older people in our society. I mean, the age does not diminish the ability to be creative. Age does not diminish the ability to be a productive member of society. But yet, you know, much like you learned about racism in your other book, there's this ageism that's out there, too. Is this going to evolve and go away?
Well, it's a fairly new occurrence, and it's a very damaging one. The whole idea that we're stripping ourselves of the most, one of the top most important parts of a society, that is knowledge, experience, and creativity. As we age, we generate knowledge. We finally, it takes us decades to get even close to deserving the name sapiens or wise. And now in our current society, when we do that, we try to shuffle people away and get rid of them. And that's a problem. There are two things going on here. One is that the current structure of society diminishes opportunities as we age for collaboration, for getting together, for creating. And that leads to health problems, at least to psychological problems, and that's bad. The other problem is we underemphasize how important it is to recognize wisdom, to understand that experience over time is really important. It takes us years to even be able to walk, longer to be able to talk. It takes us decades to be a really good human. And I think we need to recognize that.
And we get when you're talking about creativity, you're talking about far more than just the arts. You're talking about a way of thinking, a way of interacting. Now, as we get older, we've been led to believe that our skills diminish in many areas. Are we as creative as we get older as we were when we're younger? And do all of us have the capacity to experience this creative spark?
We all have the capacity to experience a creative spark, but our individual lives, our histories, our experiences are going to do different things to allow it to flourish or to repress it. And so where how we grow up and how we interact really influences our capacities. But I would argue that as we age, we have the capacity to be more creative, but we actually shut it down. Kids let their imaginations run wild. And as we become adults, we think we should stop that. I don't think we should. I think we should be more open to that. I think what's really important is as we age, as humans age, especially as humans move into, let's say, for example, retirement, sort of post-work in that area, the capacity for creativity is enormous, and yet society doesn't recognize that. Most societies around the world use their village elders actually as the go-to folks for creativity, for organization, for politics. For some reason, we've reversed that, and it doesn't seem to be working out very well for us.
Boy, how many students at Notre Dame, Mark, do you think sign up for one of Professor Fuentes's courses and thinking, oh my gosh, how am I going to sleep through this one, and find it to be the most exciting, inspiring thing they have on their schedule? This is the passion. You know, the passion's the secret to everything, isn't it? That's what really sets you apart no matter what it is you do, no matter where it is you go in life. And this man has it. You can find it in his book called The Creative Spark. Be sure to check out all the works of the always interesting Augustine Fuentes.
And a quick takeaway before we go. You know, there is no greater reminder of the gift of life than death. Whenever you lose someone you know or the news reports the passing of a familiar face, it truly is a wake-up call that reminds us all that time eventually runs out for everybody, all of us. Since nobody knows when, don't live like you have all the time in the world. Our days are numbered. Get out there and live like there's no tomorrow, because that's growing bolder.